All right, weekly text-based. Tanya, what chapter are we on?
36.
36, okay. Now, just to review. Last chapter, chapter 35, started a new theme. Do you remember that new theme? What are we addressing starting in chapter 35?
Point of life.
The point of life. Okay, why did the point of life come up?
Because the Benoni was very frustrated, saying, you're tricking me, you're just getting me to have outer perfection, but really inside I'm still the same.
Okay.
That's frustrating.
Okay, so very good. Okay, so the Benoni was complaining and saying, I like what you say, you're tricking me. You're tricking me to focus on outer perfection, but inside I'm really the same. All right. How do you put those two together? You said 35 starts talking about the point of life. You're right. That's right. And then you said the main complaint is, well, like, what's my life all about if I'm just never going to resolve my inner conflict and I can only focus on behaviors? Put those two together. Why is one an answer to the other?
Because the point of life is to connect and become one with Hashem. And when you do a mitzvah, specifically halacha, that Hashem wants us to do,
right,
that is when we become one with Hashem.
Okay, so the point of life is to become one with Hashem, which is by doing His will, which means following halacha,
right?
And therefore, just add one more sentence to make it really clear to everyone out there.
Regardless of the internal conflict.
Regardless of the internal conflict, excellent. So, very good. So the Benoni needs to hear at this point the point of life in order to understand the value of the mode of service that he's engaged in. In other words, it's not moving the goalposts. I said last week or 2 weeks ago that Benoni is suspicious that the Alter Rebbe has moved the goalposts in order to set a standard, you know, adapt a standard that the Benoni would be able to achieve, but really who says that that achievement is valuable? And it's not moving the goalposts. Really what it is it's redefining priorities. Like, it's so interesting because one of the things that happens to everyone when they learn Tanya is you start to realize that your original motivation for learning a book that tells you how to become a better person was really kind of an immature motivation, as spiritual as it is. You know, the person doesn't start learning Tanya because they want to, you know, lose 20 pounds and get fresh breath. And, you know, it's not like people learn Tanya for really coarse reasons. Everyone learns Tanya for spiritual reasons, but within spiritual reasons there are levels of spirituality. So the initial reason most of us learn a book like Tanya is on some level we're pursuing a sense of achievement, albeit spiritual achievement, but it's still, it's sort of like, you know, I want to achieve something for me. And then by the time you get halfway through Tanya, it's like, hold on a second, this isn't for you, this is for Hashem. And if you want to know, you know, you got to love someone the way they want to be loved. And if you want to know what you can do for Hashem, as opposed to charting your own progress and trying to become perfect because that's what makes you feel better, but instead realizing that you're doing something for Hashem, well then hold on a second, what does Hashem really want? What does Hashem really want? Hashem really wants that even though you're in a physical world with a body, with an animal soul and beset with all these distractions, that you can overcome all of that and unite with Him by doing His will. And if once you realize that, then you realize that really behavior is the focus. Of course emotions are important also, but behavior is really the focus. So it wasn't just the Alter Rebbe moving the goalposts and focusing on behavior because that's all the Benoni is able to focus on. It really is, objectively speaking, the most important thing. Behavior is the most important thing. Doing, action, okay? Yeah. So the question is there a difference between becoming one with Hashem and creating the Dirba Tachtonim? There is a difference between them, but they're highly linked. And in chapters 35, 36, and 37, we speak about both. We speak about both. So far, we've mostly been speaking about becoming one with Hashem. And we explain in chapter 35 very clearly how the sensitivity of the soul, the soul's emotions, its love and awe of God, are not capable of bringing it into oneness with God, counterintuitive as it is. But remember, we spoke about that subject-object relationship. And yet, the body, with its profound lack of sensitivity and consciousness, but precisely because of that, is able to just surrender to God's will and become one with God by doing God's will. So we emphasize so far this aspect of oneness, becoming one with God. You don't become one with God through the soul and its sensitivity. You become one with God through the body and its capability of surrendering and acting, therefore, as a chariot to God's will. In this chapter, perfect segue, we're going to focus more on the Dirba Tachtonim, which means a dwelling place in the lower realms.
Yes.
Exactly. Okay, so let's jump into chapter 36. Vihine. Mudas zeis mamirazal. There's a well-known saying of our sages. Shetachlis brias eilam hazeh hu. That the ultimate purpose for the creation of this physical world, why was it created? What's its purpose? Shinisave, that Hashem had a taiva, a lustful craving, that really is the accurate translation. Shinisave Kadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem was hankering liyes loy dira b'tachteinim, to have a dwelling place in the lower realms, whatever that means. And we've spoken about a dwelling place in the lower realms previously. You remember where we spoke about it?
We invite Hashem into our house.
Very good. 33 and 34 we spoke about. We invite Hashem into our house through our emunah. This is a little bit different Dirba Tachtonim now. Now explain how. Just a heads up, because he hasn't said it yet. But previously when we spoke about Dirba Tachtonim, it was more of an emotional Dirba Tachtonim, that here I am, a person with a brain and a heart and an ego and a personality, and I make room for God by thinking about God. So my consciousness serves as that dwelling place in the lower realms, right? I'm in the lower realms. I'm dealing with a lower realms consciousness. When I think about reality, I think about physicality, which is funny because physicality and reality are not synonymous, and yet because of the way that embodiment affects my soul's consciousness, I relate to physicality as being reality. So that's where I'm at. But that means I have a foothold in the physical world. So when a person like me, whose consciousness is completely physical or almost entirely physical, brings God into my life, so that's bringing God into the lower realms. That's one type of Dirba Tachtonim. Today we're going to speak about a different type of Dirba Tachtonim, where it's not just subjectively going on inside my head and my heart, but actually it's taking place in the physical world and in objects, in things. And ultimately the critical mass that's reached is where the entire physical, the sum total of all the physical world and all the physical things will become a dwelling place, and the physical world, not just my subjective consciousness, but the physical world itself objectively will become a dwelling place, and then everyone will see it.
Is it like a table, like we're taking the table?
Like we take the table and we learn Tanya at the table, and the table becomes elevated. Yeah, and we've previewed this. Chapter 7, when we spoke about Klipas Noiga, when we spoke about intermediate Klippa. So we have the lexicon that we need for understanding this concept. Okay. So he sets the tone in the beginning of chapter 36, the first line. It is known what our sages say, that the purpose of the creation of the world is that Hashem desired a dwelling place in the lower realms. Vehine, behold. There's no such thing as higher and lower when it comes to Hashem. What are you talking about, higher and lower? Because he fills all worlds equally. So what are you talking about? He wants to be present in a lower type of creation. He's present everywhere. Elabiro inyan, but here's the explanation. Kikedim shenivra ha'olam, before he created the world. Remember that? Ha'yehu levada yisbarach yachid miyuchad. He was the only thing. He was singular and unique. He was the only existence. Memali kol ha'makim hazeh shabara be'ha'olam. And he filled the place within which he would come to create the world. That's how it was before creation. He was everywhere. He was everything. V'gam ata kein hu lefanav yisbarach. And it is still that way from his perspective. From his perspective, there's no place that is outside of his awareness. There's no like outer limits of like, oh, that's no-go zone. We don't go there. From his perspective, it's all him. It's all still him. Rak shahashinui hu, but the change, the only change that has occurred from the world coming into being, ele mekablim chayus ve'eiris baruch, is from the receiver's end. That now there are other consciousnesses which have their perception of reality, and they, those consciousnesses, do not perceive God. And there are varying degrees to which they do not perceive God. Shemekablim al yedei levushim rabim mechasim hamistirim oire yisborech. Because those who receive through garments, through, call it filters, many filters which cover his light. Kedechsiv ki loi yireini ha'adam v'chai. Like Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu, you can't see me, nobody can see me and live. Good Pirshat Hazal, like our sages say, Shafilu Malachim and Yikurim Chayes, Ein Royin Chulu. In fact, even the angels who are called livers, not liver like a chopped liver, they live, they are life. And yet, no one can see me and live. Angels are life. Well, they're just like energies. Life is an energy. And they can't see Hashem and continue to exist.
They don't?
Not really. They, you know, like the eclipse, you can't look at the sun, so you look at the little shoebox thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So,
I didn't know that.
They're not looking, come on, how do you think they're going to directly look at God?
It's,
no, they're angels. Yeah, they're angels, but they see a glimmer, a reflection, a...
Uh-huh.
They don't see the actual thing. They couldn't. God is infinite. And if they would be, if they would encounter the infinite, they'd be subsumed within it because it's all encompassing and all pervasive.
And they're unlimited and Hashem is not.
What's an angel?
What's that? It's an energy. It's a spiritual energy.
So what about our loved ones that are...
Yeah, the same thing. We already told you last... We said last week. We said last week about the souls of tzaddikim. We already told you. Oh, they have profound experience of godliness, but it's not really seeing God. Come on, think about it. God, the real God, is everythingness. Tell me how you're going to stand there and retain your selfhood and have an experience of godliness, and then you're going to claim that that's godliness. By definition, it's not. If there's still a you there to perceive it, then you're not perceiving God. Now, I'm not telling you it's a complete falsehood. What I'll say is, like the eclipse thing, you're not staring at the sun, you're looking at the reflection of it. So, it's like you're standing in the lobby listening to the band playing in the wedding hall. And it's great music, okay? Or you're sitting in the dining room and mom opens the oven, you smell the apple pie, but it didn't even come out yet. But you can smell it from the other room.
So what's our experience then?
Our experience, you mean while we're embodied?
Yeah.
Even less, because we have that whole meat suit filtering our experience. We barely any godly perception gets in. But I'm saying even in heaven, where all those filters are removed, we're still not getting the real thing.
But isn't the point for us here to see everything as...
We can't see. No, we can't. We can't.
Well, then we would be
God. I thought that's what we're supposed to do, though. Isn't that our job?
We cannot perceive everythingness and still be in a position to perceive anything. Because if there's still a conscious observer, then there's everythingness minus the place of the conscious observer. So no being, it's a truism, but no being can exist in a discrete, distinct way where it can have a perception of God and have an actual perception of the real God. V'zehu inyan hishtalshlus ha'olam esvridosim mimedrega lemedrega. This concept is referred to as the chain-like progression of the creation of the worlds and their descent from level to level. Through different levels of masking, until the physical coarse world is created, this physical world is the lowest in level. There is no lower world, not even in theory. In regards to the level of concealment of God, what we call the darkness, the double and redoubled darkness. Atshehu, until the extent that this physical world is mali klipas v'sitra achra, full of klipa and sitra achra, I won't translate those terms, shehei neged Hashem mamash, which literally oppose God. Leimar saying, Ani v'yavsiyeid, I exist and nothing else exists, which is the ultimate lie, because only Hashem exists. It's enough of a lie to say, Hashem exists and I also exist. But these klippas say, I only exist. What a chutzpah. And yet, Hashem sufficiently masked himself to allow such entities, such consciousnesses to exist. So we're describing... We're describing the condition of created existence. It's a place of concealment, and these concealments are compounding. We have concealment on top of concealment on top of concealment until we yield this state called the physical world, where you can even have klippas who believe that they are ontologically independent, that they exist without a creator, which is an absurdity. But that was by design. That was by design. God wanted to create such a realm. V'hine tachlis yishtal shel shalem es v'yidosim emindereg lemindereg einoi bishvil eilem es olyenim. You should understand that the purpose of all this world building was not motivated by a desire for the higher worlds. God did not make all the worlds because he wanted heaven. You know the simplest proof of that? Simplest proof that God did not create all the worlds in order to have heaven. He would have stopped there. He would have stopped there. But he kept going, and he kept masking it more and covering it more. I've told you before the metaphor of the translucent curtains on the window, that each curtain by itself lets through some light. But if you put enough translucent curtains on a window, it will effectively be opaque. He kept on masking and masking. The word oilam, world, ayin vav lamed mem, is from the word halem, concealment. A world is a concealment. It is that which conceals creator from creation. It is that which makes creation seem more real than creator, which is an absurdity. By definition, the creation is less real than the creator. A creation, by definition, gets its existence from its creator. And then to flip the tables and make a creation seem more real than its creator, or even to come to a point where it seems like creation is real and creator is not, that's such an absurdity. And yet God pulls off that trick. It's a pretty amazing trick. He pulls it off.
Does this have anything to do with like Shishis Vibrations? That's like not even related to this.
What are you asking?
Like the days of creation, the layers of concealment, or is it like totally
I mean, this is all happening before the 6 days of creation.
Right. Okay.
This is happening before time.
Okay.
There's this world building is you got to remember, the world building goes back way before existence as we know it. So try to think about it in those terms. Okay. Now it's known, like we said, that the purpose of this world building was not in order to have spiritual worlds. It's interesting how the Alter Rebbe proves it. I said a simpler proof, which I didn't come up with on my own, by the way. But he says a different proof. The Alter Rebbe says, if the purpose of the worlds were to create heaven, they don't really even make sense. Their existence doesn't make sense because heaven is a descent. Now we think of it, no, heaven is an ascent. Yeah, from your perspective. From God's perspective, heaven is a descent. Meaning to say, heaven is a place of profound spiritual revelation, but it's not the real, it's not everything. It's not the unmasked essence. So that there's concealment there. That's how the beings in heaven are able to have an experience, because there's concealment. And then you have to ask, okay, then what was the purpose of that concealment? And really, it's just descent. If you stop at heaven, it's descent for no purpose, because there's concealment, but concealment for what? You got to go more concealment. More concealment, more concealment. If you stop at heaven, then you started the concealment process without the payoff.
Right.
Without the real payoff. You got to keep going. Heaven only exists in order to, you know, and you understand heaven isn't just one place. There are layers and layers and layers. There's Atzilus and Bria and Yetzirah, and each one masks the other one. So Hashem creates the spiritual worlds in order to create more and more and more coarsened levels of concealment until he gets to the physical world. We're going to explain it right here. Okay. Ela hatachlis hu elam hazeh tachtin. The whole purpose, the ultimate purpose, is the physical world. Why? And there are different ways of explaining this, but here's how the Alter Rebbe explains it. He says, shekach ala b'retzeinu yisbarech. Azai, because that is what arose in his mind. Such arose in his will. Liyeis nachas ruch lefonav yisborach, that he should be gratified. Kadaskaf yisutra achav yishapchach hasheichel nahira, when darkness is subjugated, and even better, when it is transformed into light. He decided, that's what I'm in the mood for. Pickles and grape jelly. I don't know why. That's just what, maybe he's pregnant, but that's what he wants. He says, you know, it would be really cool. Darkness. Let's think of it. Picture it. There'd be darkness. And then in the darkness, it would make room for light, or sometimes even be turned into light. That would be so much cooler than just regular light that is already light.
Oh, boy.
Shiyar Hashem. In other words, that the light of God, the infinite one, should shine in the place of darkness, in the place of sutrachra, the physical world. But yeser says v'yeser is, in a greater way, yisun armina choshech, in a way that is the advantage of light from dark, maharasa be'elamis elyenim, much greater than the way that it shines in the spiritual worlds. That is what motivates Hashem. He says, imagine the paradox, a world of profound concealment becoming infused with even a little bit of light. That would be an amazing effect.
So does that mean that when we bring light in the darkness, it's a brighter light than in the other?
So now we're going to get into a side conversation, which I want to try to encapsulate in 30 seconds or less, because I don't want to get derailed, but it's an incredibly important question. You're asking, okay, you're saying, I get it, that the light is brighter in the physical world than, okay, but you're asking, well, you're saying it is brighter, but then you're asking, I'm just rewording your question. You're saying, is that subjectively or objectively? Essentially what you're asking is, does it seem brighter? So effectively it's brighter? Like the people in Chelm, they said, what's more important, the sun or the moon? And they debated for weeks, and then they decided, well, the moon is more is more important. I don't know, brighter, more important, whatever. They said because the sun is shining in the day when it's bright out already, right? So, but there's some wisdom to their foolishness, all right? Maybe it means that when you're in a dark place, even a little bit of light effectively has such a profound impact. Or perhaps it means objectively. I'm not going to get into it now, but that's a great question. I clarified your question. I didn't answer it. But the point is, whatever it means, whether it's subjectively or objectively, yes.
I can say yes, by the way.
What?
Just for myself.
What?
It is brighter.
Subjectively or objectively? Actually, objectively.
It feels
brighter. It feels brighter.
It does feel brighter.
Okay, so that's subjectively. It feels brighter.
You're saying Kyle Moore is right.
Yes, yes, that's what I'm holding off from getting into. Okay, for 10 more seconds. Yisunoyer min ha-cheshech is a phrase from the Bible. It's from King Solomon. It's from his Proverbs, Mishlei. Yisroin ha'or min ha'choshech. Now, you could translate that as the advantage of light over dark, which isn't really wise at all because everyone knows that light is more valuable than dark. That's one interpretation. The next interpretation is, no, yisroin ha'or min ha'choshech. When does light have the greatest value to you? When you're coming out of the dark. So, relatively speaking, subjectively speaking, light has greater value when you're in the dark. The cup of water, when you're in the desert, is so much more valuable than when you can just turn on the tap. Okay. But then, we're in the middle, we're in the middle. We're in the middle.
We're in the dark.
Okay. I'm trying to answer your question, and I got to go fast. I got to go quick over here. But what?
It's not the light in the dark.
But I didn't finish. I know you know the end. I want to show you what you already know in the context of the whole thing, but I want to do it so quickly that you won't forget the whole thing.
I'm ready.
Okay, so I'm going to do it super fast. The biblical term is Yisunoyer min ha-cheshech. It comes from King Solomon. He was really wise. But he said, the advantage of light over dark, everyone knows light is better than dark. That's the first way of interpreting it, but everyone knows light is better than dark, so why does it take the wisdom of Solomon? It doesn't. Okay, second interpretation. Yisunoyer min ha-cheshech. When is light really valuable? When you're coming from dark. Subjectively speaking, you never appreciated that light so much as when you were in the dark. That's second interpretation. Third interpretation. Yisunoyer, and this is only from Chassidus, min ha-choshech, light that was made out of darkness. It's repurposed darkness that was turned into light. Okay? So, for instance, on a human level, psychologically, you could say, there is the light that you experience when you're in darkness and all of a sudden you appreciate the light more. That's one level. And then there's an even higher level that because of your darkness, in other words, if you wouldn't have had the spiritual darkness, you would not have the current sensitivity. So then where did your light come from? It's not just light was introduced to your situation. It's not just that light was introduced into a dark situation and therefore because you're in a dark situation, the light is appreciated more. No, it is the dark experience itself creates that light. You would not have that level of sensitivity if it were not for the dark experience. So the darkness itself has become light. Similar, that's a human experience. Similarly, Hashem is looking for that phenomenon where dark actually becomes light. Not just that light is appreciated more because it is in a context of darkness, but that darkness itself becomes Light. Okay. I didn't want to go into a whole.
That's all applicable to Shabbos candles.
Rabbi.
Yeah.
Isn't that what the tzaddik does?
But I don't want to talk about this. How come? Yes. Chapter 10. You're 100%. Yes. Yes. Chapter 10. The tzaddik does that. Yes.
We can't leave the subject.
I really want to. Okay.
Scenario was like we experience light.
Right.
The third is we create that light.
Okay, so then let me sum it up really quickly. Physicality. Don't be tricky, don't be smart, just be like simple. Pretend like you're like a 10-year-old. Okay, so answer simple. Okay. How old is she?
Nine.
Pretend you're 9.
Brings a lot of light.
Okay, just think like think like an intelligent 9-year-old, okay? Just, okay. Physicality. Physicality, the physical world, would we call that lightness or darkness? Don't be so, just think simple like a 9-year-old. Simple. You guys are being too fancy, so I can't deal with you. Just be simple, be down to earth. Because you know better, so try to go back to childlike simplicity. Don't be so sophisticated. You're being so sophisticated. Where is there more spiritual light, in heaven or on the earth? Okay, so the physical world, relatively speaking, is less spiritual light. Okay. Okay. Is that right? Am I saying correctly? Does that make sense? Make sense? Okay. And yet, here's the cool thing. Ultimately, when we do mitzvahs down here and we turn this world into a perfect world, like when Mashiach comes, there's going to be more spiritual light down here than there ever was or ever could be in heaven.
When he comes.
So, what happened was the dark place became the brightest place. Because that darkness, the physicality itself, got turned into light. Because the mitzvahs we did, interacting with the physical objects we used, turned into godliness. That's what we're saying.
And that's the Shabbos candles.
I don't know. What? What does the Shabbos candles have to do with them? Nothing. Okay. No. Everything. Everything. Nothing and everything. Okay. I want to move. What is it?
Rabbi, just yeah. Say that lost in
yeah.
skin. So it's the actions.
The place that is the place that has the greatest concealment of godliness will ultimately become the place of the greatest revelation of godliness. Not because godly revelation supplants the godly concealment, but rather because the concealment itself becomes the tool for revelation. Meaning physicality itself, which is inherently obstructing godliness, will become the greatest revelation of godliness. Physicality itself. That's what we're explaining. Let's keep moving here. Okay. Okay. Shemeir Sham al yedei levushim vehester panim hamastirim umailimim oireins of baruch hu shalai yibatlu b'mitzios. That in the spiritual worlds, the spiritual light is shining, but it's concealed so that the spiritual worlds don't become overwhelmed out of existence. But Hashem gave us this nifty tool that allows us to experience godliness without becoming overwhelmed out of existence. It's called Torah, and Torah is called Oiz V'Kayach. It's called power and strength. Like our sages say, Shekodesh Baruch Hu Nesim Kayach Batzadikim Lekabel Schadim Lasid Lave. Our sages say Hashem has to give the tzadikim special power to endure their reward in the world to come. Because, yeah, think about it. Sometimes you think, oh, give me strength to endure this punishment. No, give me strength to endure the reward. Because the reward is godly revelation. If I'm going to experience godly revelation, then by definition, if it's godly revelation, you get to a certain point where it's all God, there's no me anymore, and then how am I being rewarded?
We're not tzaddikim.
We're all tzaddikim. Vamech kulam tzaddikim. It's talking, yeah, stop it. We're all tzaddikim. Okay. Shelo yizbatlu b'mitzias mamish b'ayra Hashem anigla lasid b'li shum levosh. This Hashem has to take care that the tzaddikim don't get nullified out of existence when God is revealed to them without a concealment. K'dichsiv, like it says, v'lo yikon of eid meidacho. Your master will no longer be hidden from you. Peter shelo yiskase mimcho b'kanof levosh. He will no longer be hidden through a garment. Your eyes will see your master. We're talking about when Mashiach comes. And also it says, Ki ayin ba'ayin yiru v'gaymer. You will see eye to eye. Or sometimes it's even translated as you will see with his eyes. Yes, so we're talking about revelation. Uksiv, and it says, La yilacha eich hashemish leir yemin v'gaymer. The sun will no longer be your light. Meaning the sun, it will pale in comparison to the revelation we'll experience when Mashiach comes. Ki Hashem yelecha lo'er elam v'gamer. Hashem will be your eternal light. In other words, when Mashiach comes, it'll be light, revelation. We will see godliness.
So we'll be able to handle it?
And yet, and here's the paradox, we'll be able to handle it. So the souls in heaven are only privy to that which they can handle. When Mashiach comes and this world will become a place of profound godly revelation, it will be in a way that normally, at least until this point, was impossible. You couldn't strike that balance of that degree of revelation without the conscious observer being overwhelmed out of existence and no longer there to observe it. But it will be sustainable in the physical world. Mashiach comes precisely because the nature of the concealment, that he's using concealment to create revelation. He's using the physical to create revelation. So this...
It'll be masked.
What?
It'll be masked, a glimmer of the same idea they have in heaven.
It will no longer be masked. It will be revealed.
But how are we going to handle that?
What? Because
it will.
Because instead of it being like in heaven, where it's all about the soul's spiritual sensitivity, instead it'll just be the reality. Which is why down here, when Mashiach comes, the revelation of godliness will be objectively discernible by all. It won't just be those who studied Torah. Now, in heaven, there are levels according to how much Torah you studied, because it's subjective. When Mashiach comes, everyone will see it, and that's why all nations, not just the Jewish people, will see it. And in fact, all living beings will see it, and the animals will be peaceful, and even inanimate objects will have perception of it, because it has nothing to do with your capacity or your sensitivity. It's a totally different type of revelation.
It's like a new reality being born into existence?
Yes, yes,
but
okay,
Rabbi,
yeah.
Isn't that because of redemption?
That's what redemption is. That is redemption. We use that word all the time. Well, Geula. What is Geula? It is that state where the physical world becomes the place of greatest revelation without ceasing to be a physical world.
So, which means it's still a step removed.
But what we're saying is that this is ultimately, this is the essence. This is God finally meeting his true self. God doesn't find his true self in heaven. He finds glimmers of himself. When the physical world is completely refined, that is God meeting himself.
Does this have to be a worldly manifestation, or could an individual have this experience?
By definition, this is not an individual experience. An individual can begin to have a sensitivity to it as a precursor to it that would lead to it, but by definition, what we're describing is something that everyone would have regardless of their capacity, because that's the whole point of it. It's not about subjectivity. It's an objective change.
How can an individual start this process?
How does an individual start the process? By learning Chassidus every day. Chassidus is called Teirosa Shel Mashiach.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, why? Because when Mashiach comes, all godliness will be revealed. And learning Chassidus allows us to see godliness, especially Chassidus Chabad, where the emphasis is on Chabad, meaning a lot of times you have, you know, an experience which is very spiritually stimulating, but it's not intellectual. So therefore, after you come out of that experience, it's hard to integrate it. But when it's done in a way where it's like we're having a discussion about it like this is regular stuff, even though it's crazy, it's kind of, pause a second, kind of preposterous. We're sitting around here on Central Avenue, you know, in the middle of the day on President's Day, and we're talking about these concepts like we know what the heck we're talking about. But it's amazing. That's what Chassidus Chabad does. Chassidus Chabad gives us language to be able to speak about the unspeakable, stuff that's so abstract and profound that normally we'd have no intelligent way of dealing with it, but the Alter Rebbe gave us a language for it. And that's life-changing. And if you do that constantly, then yeah, it will change your perception to a perception that is more aligned with how everyone is going to perceive things when Mashiach comes. I'll tell you one thing. The Chassidim of the Tzemach Tzedek asked him, since when Mashiach comes, everyone's going to see the truth, no matter what, then what's the point of learning Chassidus? It's a good question. So you know what he said? He said, the point is the aha, that the guy who learned Chassidus is going to say, aha, that's that thing we were talking about. Let's wrap it up here. A couple more lines, okay? All right. So when Mashiach comes, there's going to be this massive revelation of spirituality in the physical world. V'neida, it is known, Shiyamaisa Mashiach, Befrat, Kishiyich Yoamesim, it is known that Mashiach, and especially the era of Mashiach when the dead are revived. And there are different explanations for what the timeline will look like. The conclusion is none of us know until it happens. But we do know that initially the era of Mashiach will not be supernatural, but then later on there will be miracles, and most specifically the miracle of the resurrection. Tchias HaMesim, yeah.
Depends where they're buried.
Yeah, it's also, okay. Yeah. Maybe this is where we'll wrap up with this line. Those are the ultimate point of the creation of the physical world. For which the physical world was created to begin with. The Kabbalah Schar, Ikari be'elef ha'shvi, k'meshe kosub l'kutei teire ma'arizal. And then there's something else after that called the Elef HaShvi, the seventh millennium, which is an even loftier sort of state of being. V'gam kvar hoyolei l'mein zeh b'shas matan Torah. We've had a taste of this. What would this look like to have this degree of godly revelation in an embodied condition?
But they couldn't handle it. Okay.
So you know what? It's a great place to pause. That's a great place to pause.
Okay.
So next week, God willing, we're going to continue. We're going to speak about Matan Torah as the, call it the template for an embodied, for Mashiach, which we'll define as an embodied experience of godly revelation.
Okay.
No. We're getting closer every second.
So we are getting closer.
Of course. Of course we're getting closer and closer.
Go ahead.